Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Laureen, and I am an extremely grateful member of the Al-Anon Fellowship. Thank you. Okay, wow. What an amazing weekend so far. And before I start, I just need to thank and send out huge kudos to the committee that has put this thing on. I am in awe, and I am so, so grateful. Not only has the event been amazing, but I've had the best host and hostess in the whole wide world. They have catered to me beyond my wildest dreams, and I am grateful to Patrick and Sarah for being so amazing, honestly. Thank you. Thank you. You're the best. And so far, the speakers have been outstanding. Thank you, Ocean, for your experience, strength, and hope. You are amazing. Thank you so much. Okay. So, first of all, I would like to welcome the newcomers. Is there anybody new in here today? New as far as maybe first month or so of meetings. Gosh, welcome, welcome, welcome. I always like to welcome the newcomers because you are the people that remind me of where I've come from, and I never want to forget where I've come from because it was not a happy place, and I'm grateful that I've been in this fellowship and come a long way. And I also am grateful for those of you that have been around a little longer than I have been in this fellowship, because you are the ones that continue to give me the hope that this program does truly work. And I am grateful for that. So, I'm here to tell you a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I know they've got someone timing me, but I'm going to keep my timer here, too, because I don't want to get too obsessive. Oh, I think choo-choo trains. My grandbabies love choo-choo trains. So I want to keep track of my time so I don't get obsessed in one particular area of my story and move on and get the whole thing in here. So, okay. So I was born on the East Coast in New England, Massachusetts. I'm a little Bostonian girl. And I was raised in a very strict Italian Catholic family. Those of you that understand that know what I'm talking about. My dad was very strict and kept me well under his wing. I was obviously very naive. I was not allowed to do anything. I was not allowed to go anywhere. I was very sheltered. I was not allowed to go anywhere, do anything. Even in grade school, when the girls would have little sleepovers, I was not allowed to attend. He kept his eye on me constantly. I have a younger brother who's about 4 years younger than I am. And let me tell you, in our family, being the daughter versus being the son was extremely different. My brother got to pretty much do anything he wanted, so Daddy took care of his daughter. And trust me, I was extremely sheltered. I didn't know much about anything when I got here. You know, when people talk about having street time or having been around the block a few times, I never even got next door, never mind around the block a few times. And I didn't understand that when I first got here because I didn't have a clue about much. But I understand what that means now, and trust me, I didn't even get next door. So what basically ended up happening was I grew up in a home where my dad was very strict and my mom was a very submissive wife. There was no drinking in my home. And so when I got here, I wondered, why am I here when it's for a program of people that grew up with alcoholism? Except for the fact that I was married to one. But anyway, at the time, yeah. So anyway, I learned as a result of working the program that both of my parents were children of alcoholics. So the family disease, generation to generation, was very rampant in my home, and I did not know that growing up. So, became a people pleaser long before I even knew what people pleasing was. I just wanted people to like me. I wanted you to like me, and I would do anything and everything to accomplish that. You know, I did not have a voice growing up. You know, whenever I would ask a question, my dad would say things like, "What are you doing, writing a book?" You know, I didn't have an opinion, I didn't have a voice, so I never said anything. I never felt worthy enough to have an opinion, to even have a thought, to have a dream, to have anything worth anything for myself. So, you know, I grew up in that environment. I grew up feeling that, you know, I was not worthy of anything. And I was very shy, I was very timid. Believe it or not, when you get to know me a little bit better, I was that little wallflower, and I didn't have much to say, I didn't do much, and, you know, that was just my life. So I was sent to Catholic schools, I was sent to an all-girl Catholic high school, because that's where I was going to be protected from the bullies, so my father thought. And then when my freshman year of high school, when one of the girls got pregnant, I told my dad he didn't believe me because he didn't think such a thing could happen when he was sending me to this particular school. But it did, and so enough of that. But anyway, I decided after high school that I was going to, you know, go off to college, and what happened was my choice of profession was to be a nurse. Of course, I was going to take care of people professionally. And I became a nurse, and my parents, especially my dad, was very proud because I was going to be a professional nurse. And no one in our home and most of our family had gone to college to become anything. They never amounted to anything. You know, they were all laborers and hard workers. And is that better? Not really, is that better? Okay, so they were all hard workers, and I went to college and became a nurse. So I loved being a nurse, and I was a nurse for 45 years before I recently have retired. And trust me, I loved it. I enjoyed it immensely. You know, the thing that interested me when I got to learn a little bit about myself was the fact that I was such a doormat. I let people walk all over me all the time. I was such a people pleaser that if you wanted me to do something, I would do it. I never questioned it. It didn't matter. I just wanted you to like me, so whatever it took, I did. And I would give you the shirt off my back just to make you like me, because I just had, you know, I just needed that appreciation and that acknowledgement. So what ended up really occurring for me was the fact that, you know, I needed to grow up, and I needed to, you know, let go of those strings attached, you know, to that apron of my mom or whatever. And so I had an opportunity to move cross country to California, and the reason was to get a job, and because I was able to find a better job. And I decided to move here, so I did. And my parents were not happy. They did not think highly of my choice, but I did it anyway. And I just chose that. And I could not believe that I was even doing such a thing, because you just don't leave your home when you're the only daughter, the only girl in the family. And I could understand why my parents were being very upset about that. But what happened was, I moved cross country, and I, you know, with a coworker that I had been working with, a young lady that I worked with. And when I got here, okay, so living in New England and being a very sheltered young lady, you know, my ideas of California were very commercialized, I guess I could say. And I was prepared for Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon and Beach Blanket Bingo. That's what I was ready for, and it was going to be so much fun, and I could not wait to get here. Well, I get to California, and it wasn't really all that. My expectations were not met, and so But it was a lot of fun, and it was a lot of excitement. And things were happening that I had never seen, never heard. I mean, I was like in awe of everything and everyone. The lifestyle here was way different than I was accustomed to. So I was like having culture shock when I got here. And people I was meeting were like, they were amazing. I couldn't believe the things that they were doing and saying and what was happening and going to parties. Oh my gosh, scared me half to death. The things that took place at parties, because I hadn't been a party girl. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, that's my thing. Like, did this really happen? I would leave early because I was scared. And I was just really, really scared. So anyway, in the hospital I was working at, this new young guy started working there in the pharmacy, and he was adorable. He had long blonde hair, pretty blue eyes. He was like a little surfer boy, and oh my gosh, did he ever get my attention. I thought, wow, he is so cute. But you know, from afar, because you know, I wasn't an assertive, aggressive young woman. He decided to talk to me one day, and I was like shaking in my boots. And he would talk to me every time he would come up to my nursing unit, and I was like, wow, I think he might like me. Like, I couldn't believe it, because you know, I just had such a terrible feeling of my own self-worth that I didn't think somebody so cute and adorable would want to have anything to do with me. Well, he asked me out on a date. I was so excited. And I thought, yes, I would like that. We were going to go to dinner. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is almost too good to be true. A couple of days later, he came up to me and he said, you know, Lorene, I'm really sorry, but I've got to cancel our date because I have, you know, some bills I have to pay and my rent, and I don't really have the money, and I need to, you know, take care of that, so we might need to postpone the date. And then initially I was like so disappointed, but my next thought was, what a responsible guy. He's paying his bills, doing what's right. We can go on to dinner another time, no problem. So instead I said, well, why don't you come to my place and I'll cook us dinner? And he said, sure, of course. So that's what happened. And the interesting thing was that day was on St. Patrick's Day. It was March 17th. And so he showed up at my apartment, and he brought me a little basket of silk flowers with the big green ribbon, and of course a bottle of wine. And being Italian, the only thing I knew how to cook was Italian food, so I made lasagna, and we had a lovely dinner. And he will tell you a lot of things happened that did not happen at all, because look at who we're talking about here. And we had a lovely evening, and you know, we dated a few more times, and the dating relationship became more of a serious relationship. And then that serious relationship, obviously, you know, became a permanent relationship. So we moved forward and became a marriage. A marriage occurred. So it took a while, but it happened. So anyway, I had some concerns, though, after a while, because as cute and adorable as he was, he really enjoyed doing things that weren't really my cup of tea. And, you know, at first, he was so exciting. Aren't they all exciting? Going places, doing things, parties, the beach, someone's house, and, you know, he did take me to some fun places, like, you know, we'd go to the Arboretum, or, you know, nice places that I liked, and, you know, going to a movie, or going here and there, but the house parties we went to were really bizarre. Like, people there were really strange, and they did some pretty not okay things in my book. The one time, this is the craziest thing, we were at one of his friends' houses, and they had an ashtray on the table, and at the time I smoked, I know it wasn't a good thing, cigarettes. And so I lit up a cigarette, there was an ashtray there, and the guy said, "Oh, I'm sorry, you can't smoke in my house." But yet they were rolling joints and smoking up a storm amongst other things. And I said, "Well, but he goes, if you want to smoke a cigarette, you have to go outside." And I went, "Oh my gosh, this is craziness." But they were, that's the insanity of that disease. But so anyway, so things started happening that were not so nice. And he started progressively drinking more, doing more recreational drugs, and not coming home for days. And things were just unpleasant and unacceptable, although I didn't know those terms at that time. And so when these things were happening, I got really scared, and I thought, you know, I don't know what to do, and I couldn't tell anybody, because we don't tell people what's happening in our home. When I was growing up, I didn't tell people what was happening in my home because I was afraid, because all my girlfriends' lives were a little different, like my classmates' lives, they were a lot more different. So I couldn't tell you what was happening. So the same thing was how I felt at this time in my life. I can't tell you what's going on in my home, but I just knew it wasn't okay. So, you know, what ended up going on was I was becoming fearful, I was becoming angry, I was becoming, I was in a lot of denial, honestly. I didn't want to admit that there was a problem in our home, because, like, we would go somewhere, like we would go to a wedding, like a coworker had a wedding, we went to the wedding, and he was pounding them left and right and having a fine old time and got pretty wasted. And when we got back, when I went back to work the next Monday, and a couple of my coworkers said, "Boy, your husband sure can drink." And I said, "I know, but he can handle it. I mean, he's, you know, it's just how he is." And I found myself making excuses. You know, the literature, Understanding Ourselves, my absolute favorite piece of literature. You know, I told those little lies to mend those damaged relationships and, you know, all that we read about. And I didn't realize I was doing that. I didn't realize I was trying to cover up for him. And, you know, but I never told his family. I never told his family what was truly going on in our home, because I was afraid to do that. Because they, what would they think of me? And for whatever reason, why would I think they would think badly of me? It was their son, right? But I still couldn't tell people. I couldn't tell people because I was afraid I was going to be the victim and I was going to be blamed. I mean, they were going to think I was a terrible wife. So anyway, a series of events occurred, and one thing led to the next. You know, lots of several 502s, a little nudge from the judge. He ended up going to drunk driving school, and, you know, he met some people, and I was kind of done. I was ready to go back to Boston. I was checking the bank accounts, making sure I had enough money for a one-way ticket back home, and I was serious. I was done. I can't do this anymore. So we were supposed to go to dinner this one night, and I went and got my hair done, came home to go to dinner. He was wasted, like, and he tells me, he goes, "I think I'm an alcoholic. I think I have a drinking problem." You think? So I said, you know, whatever you think. And there was a guy at the house, and they were going to go to a meeting or something, whatever. So they did start going to meetings, and he did start attending AA meetings and getting involved in the program. And so I thought, good, this could be good. So I, being the good wife, the supporting, loving wife, started going to meetings with him, to the open AA meetings. And I had a little notebook, and I started taking notes of what people were sharing. and what applied to him, and if it was really applying to him, I would nudge him to make sure he didn't miss that one. And then we would get home and we would review the notes, because I thought it was important. After all, I need to support him, and I wanted to make sure he got it right. Because after all, this was a, you know, if we're going to make it, we're going to make it together, right? So I went to meetings with him for about a week, and then these couple of ladies approached me at this open A speaker meeting, and they said, "Hey, Lorene, have you ever thought about going to Al-Anon?" And I said, "What is Al-Anon?" I had no idea. And they said, "Well, it's a place where you go to learn about alcoholism." And I went, "Oh, well, you see, I'm a nurse, and I learned about alcoholism when I was in nursing school, so I'm good. No worries." And they laughed at me. And I thought, how dare they insult my knowledge? I mean, that was very rude of them. Well, today I understand exactly why they laughed at me, because I would have laughed at me too. I had no idea about the disease of alcoholism, not one clue. So I decided, okay, I'll try this Al-Anon thing, and I went to an Al-Anon meeting. The first Al-Anon meeting I went to, I sat there, like, in the corner, listening and thinking, oh my God, these women are sick. They have issues. They were talking about things that no one should ever talk about in a huge group of people. This is private stuff. You don't talk about this in public. This stays home behind the closed doors. You don't talk about this here. Well, they were talking about lots of stuff. And it really kind of concerned me that they would do that. But I said, okay, fine, I won't judge them. I will go. And I continued to go. So, hence, you know, boy goes to AA, girl goes to Al-Anon, and this is what we did for a while. And I'll tell you, it was okay. Although I did have a little difficulty with the AA program, though. Especially the AA women. They bothered me a lot. You know how we all hug when we see each other? It's kind of a commonality amongst all of us. Well, when these little young AA women are hanging on all over my man at an AA meeting, I don't like that. That was not okay. So those little AA chicky poos were a problem. I let him know that. It was like, you do not get to do that. I don't like it. Well, you know, who am I to say? A recovery is a recovery. And do not resent the method of recovery is what my sponsor told me. Because I got a sponsor because I was told to get a sponsor, and I follow direction well. I always have, so I figured I might as well continue to do that. So, I was told to go to these open AA meetings because I needed to do, that's the only way I was going to develop compassion for the alcoholic. I had to listen to their story. I had to hear it from them, because I had no idea. I had no compassion. I just knew that you don't have to drink. I don't have to drink, so you don't have to drink. I had no idea about the true disease of alcoholism and what it takes and what it is that allows them to be the person they are. And so I went to these open AA meetings, and boy, what an eye-opener that was. Man, I learned so, so much about them. And, so don't resent the method of recovery, people. It works if you work it. And I went to my Al-Anon meetings, and I'll tell you, I learned so much. I started to learn about me. I started to find out who Lorene really was. You know, and I was that scared little girl, and I was trying to learn more about me. You know, who am I? You know, when people say, "How are you?" And I'd say, "Oh, I'm fine." That was just all I could say, because I didn't know how I was. I couldn't tell you how I felt. You know, there's a page in one of our books that talks about cans on a shelf that have no label. You know, I knew I didn't feel okay, but I couldn't tell you how I felt. I couldn't give you a feeling, a name of a feeling. And the page talks something about when you open up that can, that has no label, that's when you get to see what's inside. And that's when you get to see what that feeling is. You know, that's when I got to learn that I was afraid, that I was angry, that I was in denial, that I was, you know, fearful, whatever the feeling was when I opened up that can without the label. So that's when I began to develop and learn who this kid was. You know, who am I? That's who I am. I'm a scared little girl that needs to start learning about herself and start opening up and start being the person I really want to be. So, you know, I was very fearful, and I learned that the opposite of fear is faith. So the God thing was a real big issue for me as well, because I was brought up in a religion that was terrifying to me. And I decided to stop participating in that religion after I became an adult. What I learned in Al-Anon was Al-Anon is not a religious program. It is a spiritual program. And that made the biggest difference for me, because my spiritual program was such an amazing program for me. Trying to watch my time here. And so, you know, the Serenity Prayer was a lifesaver. Oh my gosh, I said that Serenity Prayer every day, pretty much all day, for a very, very long, long time. And it saved my butt, more than I can tell you, because that's all I had. That's all I could do. And, you know, when we talk about the working the steps, you know, and the first three steps were, like, amazing. You know, it's like I came to, and I came to believe. Those were, like, monumental for me. You know, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Because I didn't think I was crazy when I first got here. And the word powerless, to me, translated to weakness. But I learned very quickly that's not at all what powerless meant. You know, I of my own was powerless. I obviously couldn't fix anything or anyone. I had to allow life to happen. All I had power over was my own life. I could only change my own self, and that's the only thing that I could do, no matter how much I tried to do for anybody else. I learned, too, that, you know, my God was bigger than anything and anyone, and I often had to just tell my problem how big my God was, because that, to me, spoke volumes. And as huge as my problems could be, my God was way bigger, like way bigger. You know, I learned so much about everything. And I know that we all come together to tell a story. And our story is a story of healing. And as we do that, we tell our stories. It's your story, my story, our story. We're like a blended family. You know, we all have our own story, but we're all here for the same reason. And we are a family. We are the Al-Anon family groups. And thank goodness for that. You know, we're here to support each other, to care for each other, to help each other, to lift each other up when we feel like we're falling. And this is who we are. This is why we're here. You know, we are here for each other always. And, you know, your life doesn't get better by chance. You know, it gets better by change. You know, and I was kind of stubborn. I didn't want to change because I felt I had it all together. But, you know, change the things we can. And that's what we're taught here. And I'm so grateful that I was able to do that. And, you know, we have they call it the three M's. It's managing, manipulating, martyrdom, and then we add mothering, because we're all little mamas in some way or form, you know, taking care of everyone and everything. But, you know, I'm very guilty of all four of those, managing, manipulating, martyrdom, and the mothering. And I had to identify that, and I didn't know that until I got here. You know, people that had been here before I got here were able to teach me. I became teachable. You know, I thought I knew everything. Oh my God, I was a well-educated woman. I thought I knew everything about this, you know, life on life's terms. And, you know, I would sit there and I would nod my head when people were sharing, like, oh my gosh, I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. That's how I feel. You know, and being together with people like that gave me such comfort. And I felt so a part of something. Finally, I felt a part of. You know, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. I had a couple of really tight girlfriends, just a couple growing up. And so being a part of a fellowship of hundreds of people, the family, the Al-Anon family group, was such a huge gift to me. You know, and the serenity we talk about, that priceless gift of serenity. Today, there isn't a box big enough or a bow, huge red bow, huge enough to put on that box of serenity. And that gift is amazing to me. I know about, you know, today it doesn't say let go and let Laureen. It says let go and let God. So I have to remember that I am not in charge. The world doesn't revolve around me. You know, I have to remember that God is the one that's in charge of my life today. And I get to make choices, and hopefully I make good choices, you know, because I've learned so much here. I've learned so much, and I have the honor and privilege of being a member of this fellowship. And, you know, we are an attraction, not a promotion. I remember early on, I wanted everyone to know about this, because we all know that everybody out there in the world needs the Al-Anon program. I don't care if you're married to an alcoholic or not. Everybody out there needs the Al-Anon program, and I use it every day. It's a program of living. Even at the grocery store, when you're in line with the checker or the person in front of you that is like counting pennies or change, or the checker that couldn't put a smile on her face if you paid her, you know, and it's like, I just say, hi, how you doing today? And she'll say, I'm fine, you know, ringing up your stuff, and I'll say, well, I hope your day gets better. And then I go on my merry way, because you know what? I'm not responsible for anyone's happiness but myself, but I can surely try to put a little sunshine in someone else's life if I choose to do that. And I learned that here. I learned about these things, and I learned that it's okay to not be perfect. That was a tough one, because don't you know, I was Miss Perfection. Practically perfect, just like Mary Poppins. That was me in every way, shape, and form. But today I try to just chill out a little bit and not worry so much about all of that. And fear was a big one for me. But fear only has the power that we give it, and that's a choice. And that, but hope works the same way. You know, and hope is... I love the little acronyms, and my favorite one is for hope is hang on, pain ends. And that's a big one for me, because when I'm in the midst of a painful situation or a fearful situation, that's where I go. I just hang on, pain ends. And Hope for Today is one of my favorite books. I read 4 books every day now, because we have our new book that we read, and I just want to share a little bit in one of the pages in Hope for Today. And there's a couple of things in here, and it talks about, and I call it the wonderful world of we. That's not in the book, but that's what I say. And it talks about we means my life is no longer a wilderness within which I'm trapped, wandering aimlessly. And that today's serenity surrounds me on my journey. And I no longer merely have to survive the hour, the day, or even the year in loneliness and isolation. Instead, I can learn to trust someone else and take a chance based on the wisdom of the Al-Anon program. We helps me to learn to walk in freedom and dignity and to become the person that my God designed me to be. And together, we're going to make it. And that is so, so true. And that's the wonderful world of we, as far as I can tell. So, I think that I have heard so many amazing stories in my years of Al-Anon, and all I know for sure is that I'm so grateful that the God of my understanding has changed from the days when I walked into this door, in the doors of these rooms. And I now have a God of the impossible. Because when I walked into these rooms, I was not happy with the God of my understanding, because if there really was a God, a nice girl like me would not be with a jerk like that. I deserved way better than what I had. And that's how I thought. But the truth of the matter was, it was my choice. I made those choices, but I didn't want to take accountability for that. But today I know that I can make healthy choices. I can make smart choices, you know, and I know that my God is always there with me. And, you know, this month of April, okay, first let me tell you just real quick. So we had that lasagna dinner on St. Patrick's Day, right, because I'm Italian. I never had corned beef and cabbage in my life. So every year on St. Patrick's Day, we would have a lasagna dinner. We call it Lasagna Day. And after we had our children, every year for St. Patrick's Day, they would have lasagna. They never had corned beef and cabbage either. So to this day, our children are 40 and 42 years old, and they've never seen their dad take a drink. Thank you, God. We have Lasagna Day, and they look forward to it. The grandchildren, the children, it's Lasagna Day. So next time St. Patrick's Day rolls around, have lasagna. But switch it up, right? But you know, what I'm saying is these are things that we get to do today because they are special. They are a gift. They remind us of where we've come from and how much we've grown. And the month of April 13th was the day I walked into my very first Al-Anon meeting in 1981, which makes me 43 years in the program this month. And I only share that because the program really works. And when I was told to keep coming back, I took that wholeheartedly, because I was never invited to go anywhere. And when I was invited to keep coming back, I said, oh my God, yes, I will. I was so excited because it was an invitation. I was so excited to please keep coming back. Yes, I'm going back. They want me back. I'm going back. But you know, the most important thing I want to tell you is that, first of all, my God never says oops. There are never mistakes. Things happen because that's his plan, not my plan. And, you know, when we have those dark days where we feel that it's just not going to be okay, what I have to remember is when it gets dark enough is when we see the stars. And when you look at night and it's dark is when the stars will shine. And those are the times I think about when my days seem really dark and my stars start to shine. And then I just want to share this one quick story, if I can, with you, because there's so many miracles in this program. This was quite a few years back, maybe about 15 plus years ago. I was at a convention, and my daughter had her son. He was about 6, 8 years old at the time, and they were at the beach. That's my warning. They were at the beach, and I was at the convention. I got a call that this little boy was caught in a riptide at the beach and was near drowning. And they had to call ambulance, and the lifeguards had to rescue him. And they had to take him to Children's Hospital in Orange County. And, of course, we were all terrified. We didn't know what was going to happen with this little boy. And so I'm at the convention, and I am just a mess. And my Al-Anon sisters are gathered around me, and there was an Al-Anon brother that came by. And he wanted to know what was happening, and I told him what was happening. He goes, "Oh, Maureen, we got this. We're going to pray. God's got this." And he gave me this little stone that had the Al-Anon symbol carved into it. He goes, "Here, take this," and he put it in my hand and held my hand real tight. And he said, "It's going to be okay." So my daughter called us later to tell us, you know, he did make it okay. They had him at the hospital, and they were treating him, and he was going to be okay. When she went back to gather their things at the beach, she asked the lifeguards, "You know, my son just told me that there was a man in the ocean right next to him that reached his hand out to help pull him out of the ocean." And the lifeguard said, "There was no man there. We were there. There was no man there that helped him." And so all I can tell you is that God was there, pulled that baby boy up. He's our baby boy, out of that water before the lifeguards got there. So he did not go into that riptide. So that's part of that story. The other part is, I called the friend of mine that gave me that stone. He goes, "Please call me and tell me how things went." So I called him back when I got home to tell him that he was okay. And he said, "I knew he would be, Maureen." And I said, "Thank you so much." I said, "Your support was so, so appreciated." He goes, "We lost our daughter in a drowning accident." He said, "So when you shared that with me, I knew I had to be there for you." And he said, "I'm so glad to hear the outcome of your story." And I shared the miracle of whatever power was there to pull our baby out of that water before the lifeguards got there. I'm telling you, please keep coming back before the miracles and let the miracles happen. And I will tell you this, that God is still writing your story, and you need to quit trying to steal the pen, and you just need to trust the author. Thank you for letting me share.